And I believe all of us, you know, the Bible says this, David served his purpose in his generation and he went to sleep. Well, I believe we all have a unique purpose and it's around what we're good at, what God's already given to us that we're good at, and vocationally where we have access to a job. And when those things merge together, that calling sits in the middle. And when we get that, we get a reason to get out of bed in the mornings.
Welcome to the Building Excellence Podcast. I'm your host, Bailey Miles. The Building Excellence Podcast is all about sharing inspiring stories from some of the most successful athletes, coaches, business minds, and thought leaders to help you build excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy. To learn more, visit baileymiles.com and be sure to rate, review, and follow us on all social media platforms. Now let's get to the show and start building excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy. Mike Lynch is a senior pastor of North Star Church in Kennesaw, Georgia. He is also the host of the Lynch with a Leader podcast. Mike grew up in Georgia and played baseball at Liberty University under legendary New York Yankee great Bobby Richardson. After college, he felt called to step into full-time vocational ministry. However, that didn't stop his love for athletics. He still serves as the pitching coach for the Altoona High School baseball program, as well as a chaplain for the Bucks football team and as a guest chaplain for the Atlanta Falcons. He also hosts a call with MLB scouts, college coaches, and athletic administration professionals to help grow in leadership and faith. As mentioned before, Mike is the host of the Lynch with a Leader podcast. His podcast is all about inviting leaders to listen and learn the spiritual principles behind big success. He has interviewed many great leaders like John Gordon, Daryl Strawberry, Andy Stanley, Mark Rich, Patrick Lencioni, Dansby Swanson, Rachel Cruz, and so many more people. It's one of my favorites to listen to. On the show, Mike shares his story, the impact of his parents playing college baseball, and the impact of his coach, stepping into ministry, pursuing a calling, being able to say no, having vision, how consistency compounds, parenting, lessons from his podcast, and so much more. For more info on Mike, check out his podcast, Lynch with a Leader, on all podcast platforms, as well as mikelynch.com and northstarchurch.org. I'm excited to introduce you to this great man. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the Building Excellence Podcast. Today we have a special guest, Mike Lynch. Thank you so much for being here, Mike.
Bailey, it is great to be here and an honor to get to spend some time with you.
Yeah, well, if you wouldn't mind, maybe give our listeners some context to you and your background and what life was like growing up for you.
Yeah, so I live northwest of Atlanta, Georgia, up in a little town called Kennesaw Acworth, Georgia, in Cobb County. If you're familiar with Truist, where the Braves play, we're about 25 minutes north of Truist. I've lived here for 32 years. I've lived in this community and absolutely love it. Never dreamed I would stay somewhere that long, but love it. Grew up on the south side of Atlanta and then went and played baseball in college in Virginia and then moved to Kennesaw and Acworth, man. That's sort of a pretty quick snapshot of the story.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've heard you touch on your parents and how impactful was their just love and care for you as a young person. And what do you look back on them and really appreciate?
You know, I think my parents grounded me, I think would be the word I would use. I not only got taken to church, but I watched them live out their faith story without telling me what to do. I picked up a lot of what they left behind, and man, they were just grounding. They were older. So I was 11 years younger than my brother and 9 years younger than my sister. So I don't think that I was on their grand scheme radar of life. But they had sort of figured out a lot of things, I think, by the time I came along. And they made me growing up very easy. And it was a great little community I grew up in. But man, they just set up great guardrails and laid a great foundation for me to do. And I wouldn't be who I am today without them.
Absolutely. Well, you touched on going to school in Virginia, which was Liberty University. Was sports something that was a part of your life growing up? And then 100%. What did it look like to go on to play baseball?
Yeah. Man. So, I mean, I can't remember. In fact, you know, I think summertime, I think playing outside all day, that's all we did. And so it was baseball in the summer. It was basketball in the fall and baseball again in the spring. I didn't play football, but I was a big football fan. And so that was life growing up. I played basketball up till ninth grade. And then I started to see, well, this baseball thing might turn out pretty good, and really began to hone in. But gosh, growing up, You played in the spring and summer. You didn't play in the fall. So it wasn't year round. Mm-hmm. So it was so different back then, but man, sports were just a part of who I was. And when I signed to play at Liberty, I dreamed like every other kid, this is it. I mean, I'm going to the big time, you know, and I found out very quickly that my level was going to stay at college. That was, I began to look around me and see the guys that were going on to the next level. And I learned it wasn't going to be me. I was definitely helping other teams' players get to the next level with my pitching, but I knew I didn't have the talent for it. And so baseball was just, I mean, that was in my blood and it still is to this day. It's just a part of who I am and what I do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, even just to get to Liberty, there's a lot of work, discipline, time, and things that go into that. And then getting to Liberty, you're around a lot of different people that also put in that time. So as you got to Liberty, though, there was a coach that you had that wound up, he was a great New York Yankee baseball player. And I heard you touch on his story a little bit. I think he retired at maybe 31 or 33 out of playing in the prime of his career. How was his impact on you as a player to see him as a coach and then to hear a little bit more of his backstory too?
You know, it's funny. I remember the day Bobby Richardson called my house. I had never heard of him. My dad answered the phone, and these were in the days there was one phone in the kitchen and there was like a phone downstairs. There wasn't a lot of phones. And my dad answered the phone and he's like, a coach named Bobby Richardson's calling. And I'm like, I don't know who Bobby Richardson is. He's like, you need to take this call. So I ended up getting on the phone with him. Of course, you start researching and learning that he was a multi-gold glove winner. He was a New York Yankee during their heyday, 58-66. He was a World Series MVP. And I thought, well, that would be cool. So I went and met him, signed with Liberty, and thought, well, that's going to be neat. You know, I'm going to get a guy with a lot of folklore around him playing with Mantle and Maris and Yogi Berra and the whole crew. But what I found was somebody who got it. He just understood life. I remember going to his house, Bailey, and all his gold gloves. I mean, there were six or seven gold gloves. They were just against his wall in the basement. He gave away every World Series ring. He won multiple World Series to his friends in Sumter, South Carolina, because stuff just didn't matter to him. And he never told us that. I just watched him live it. And we would sit on the bus and he would tell the Yankee stories of the World Series and the Whitey Fords. And it was just overwhelming the senses to hear all the stories. But then I just watched how he lived out his life as a husband and a father and a coach. And I tell people this all the time. I do a lot of work with coaches. He was the first coach I ever remember really seeing live out what he said he believed in his language and the way he acted on the field. And it marked me. It marked me. And I look back now, Bailey, and you were in recruiting for a long time. I wasn't there for baseball. I really wasn't. My talent level shouldn't have gone to that level. I was there for a bigger reason. And to get to rub shoulders with him for three of my 4 years, he was there for three of my four, I just left a better person because of knowing Bobby Richardson.
Yeah, well, I think that's a powerful story. As we were talking before, just the impact of coaching. You coach, obviously, today as well. But the impact that you can have on a young person. And that's it's not always what you say. I mean, it is what you say too, but the example that you said, I've been saying this, I heard this not too long ago, but it's preach the gospel, use words if necessary.
That's exactly right.
And I think that's a great perspective on that, is his example spoke the words that he didn't even have to say.
That's exactly right. And every guy who played there would say the same thing. Mm-hmm. Every guy. Yep.
Yeah. One, and two, I think there was a story where I think he had, you know, obviously been let go your senior year. And so a new staff came in, but he had done something where you got to keep your scholarship, if I believe that's correct.
That's right.
And I think exactly that's a pretty cool story.
Yep. Yeah, it was. And my parents were very appreciative of that. And so it hurt my ego that the new coach wanted to go to another direction. But I look back and I'm so thankful coach did what he did for me to keep that scholarship, because that last year I learned a lot. I'm still using today. But that's the kind of person he was. You know, you think about it now and you're like, well, of course he did. That's who Bobby Richardson was. That's how he lived out. And that's why he's done 13 of the Yankee funerals. And he's known all across America as one of the greatest, not only greatest baseball players, but one of the greatest men to be an ambassador for the game.
Yeah, well, that's a great story. So obviously, you know, getting out of college, you thought about maybe coaching and then also that's ministry. Right. How did you decide on getting into ministry, and what was that decision process like for you?
Yeah, that's great, man. That was a real crossroads. And I remember, I think every baseball coach and player loves the movie Field of Dreams. And there's the scene with Moonlight Graham that he's always dreamed of playing in a pro game. And a little girl falls and she's sick. And if he steps across the line and he becomes a doctor, then he can't go back and play. But after he does, he basically says, this is what I was created to do. And I felt that. I really felt like I could go into coaching and really enjoy it, but I think I'm called into something else. And that something else was full-time vocational ministry. And it was scary because I knew baseball. I dabbled in ministry just as an intern, but man, looking back on it, God knew exactly what he was doing. And what I love about it is I could have been just as much a minister in the coaching world. I don't think I understood that at the time the way I understand it now, but that intersection where I had to make a choice of which direction really sort of fixed my life on a pathway that I'm still living out today.
Yeah, absolutely. And going into that decision, has faith always been a part of your life and been very important to you?
Yeah. So I grew up when you didn't get options about going to church. I don't ever remember my mom and dad asking me if I thought it was a good idea. So I grew up, but it really became mine at 14. When I was 14, my faith, I dropped the anchor of my faith and began to really live that out, and was blessed to grow up in a great church with an amazing pastor and an incredible youth pastor who'd been a college football player. And man, they just sort of, they set a pathway for me, and that faith, you know, what began as a spark, I just had good people pouring gas on it, and then graduated. I went to a large public high school, but then ended up going to Liberty. And then those 4 years were just transformative for me. And faith, I don't remember a day of faith wasn't part of my journey, but at 14, it became mine. And it wasn't my mom and dad's, it was mine. Mm-hmm. And that was the game changing moment for me.
Well, going into that, you know, I'm always curious about how people make decisions on, should I go this way or this way? If there's a fork in the road, how do you determine when it's time to maybe hang it up or change directions and pivot?
Yep.
And so when you look at faith, and you have faith as a core part of who you are and what you do, you know, processing and decision-making and trusting God in those moments is critical, you know? So what does it look like in terms of trusting God and understanding? You talked about the word calling. How do people go about kind of deciphering and understanding what that looks like, and how do you take those steps necessary to make sure you're going in that direction?
Yeah, and I think for all of us, we have gifts and abilities. And I think our calling is the intersection of those gifts and abilities. So for me, it was a vocational calling to equip people like you that are in the work world and in the coaching world to be who they were created to be. While I am not in it, I get to help people in it. So this morning I was with a superintendent of schools, a gentleman that's in college administration at a large university here in Atlanta, a gentleman who's a chief of police, and a guy who owns a company, and they do work with corporations all across the country. I get to help these guys be who they were created to be. And I think for all of us, we look at our gifts and abilities. We look at the open doors. In that middle piece of the call that's on our lives, what I believe comes from our Creator is that special purpose He created us for. And I believe all of us, you know, the Bible says this: David served his purpose in his generation and he went to sleep. Well, I believe we all have a unique purpose, and it's around what we're good at, what God's already given to us that we're good at, and vocationally where we have access to a job. And when those things merge together, that calling sits in the middle. And when we get that, we get a reason to get out of bed in the mornings. And so I love what I do because I get to find guys like I was with today and help them be in their spaces the best they can be.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And kind of going into that first step of getting into ministry, what did it look like for you? And what was it like being in what you were doing? And then how did you kind of transition to getting into what you're doing today?
Yeah. So I had done some internships in the summer while I was in college. And so I knew, all right, I think I really like this. And I grew up in a great church. And so I saw it at a great place. And as a kid, I'm like, man, I would love to work there one day. And so that helped me a ton. I had a very good view of ministry at that point in my life. And when I made that decision that is where I'm going to spend the rest of my life, and I probably did that my sophomore or junior year of college, and I made that decision of which direction I knew I wanted to take, then it's sending out resumes. And I thought I had a job. And that sort of the story was I'd worked in a ministry for two summers where I was in front of hundreds and hundreds of churches and been approached a lot about, hey, when you graduate, would you want to come work for us? Nope, I've already got something lined up. I got a job lined up. It's all good. Thank you, though. I'll keep your business card. You know, and so it's my spring of my senior year. My wife and I are engaged, and I didn't travel with baseball. It was my first year not traveling. I was a student coach that year, but I didn't play. And so we went home for spring break, and I went and met with the church I thought I was going to go on staff at, and was informed there was no position and that wasn't going to work. And I remember breaking that news to my beautiful soon to be bride, who's going, I wonder how I can get out of this deal. And so I began to send out resumes and call people I knew and all the stuff. And a random joker that remembered me from a camp 3-4 years prior called my parents in Fayetteville, got my number at Liberty, called and said, hey, my church is looking for a youth pastor. Would you be interested? And at, you know, when we all reach these crises in our lives, we want to pray about it. And so I prayed and said, Lord, should I be interested? And the answer was yes. Right. So I need a job. And I graduated, moved home, came back and met with that church, and it was in Kennesaw, Georgia, and never heard of it. Never been to Kennesaw in my life. And the Lord had bigger plans that I couldn't see that were going to happen 30 years later. But that was the door he opened. And so it was scary. It was nerve-wracking. But in the same way, I felt very equipped. You know, just like if you've been an assistant coach for a long period of time and trained under a great coach, that's why there's great coaching trees, you know, because these guys grow up under this great coach and then they go out. I grew up under a great youth pastor and a great pastor who trained me, and I felt very equipped. I was nervous, but very equipped, very equipped.
Absolutely. Well, I think the point that I really think about whenever you're telling a little bit of your story, which is a challenge for everyone, but if you can make this your first line of going to prayer, whenever something pops in your head of like, should I do this? Going to prayer first, and then you can go to people. Because sometimes it's easy to go to people and ask for discernment direction, which is a good thing. But the prayer thing, I think, is really important. As you said that, I was writing it down because I think it's really important. And then also, too, you don't have opportunities. I think this is interesting to point out, but you don't have opportunities come to you if you're not doing a great job wherever you're at beforehand. So you talked about doing that 3 to 4 years before, and someone reached out. And it's because you were doing a good job in the moment and treating people the right way beforehand. So I think that's a great part of your story and some of the reasons why some good things happen, because you're doing the right things at the right time. So
that's good.
Anyway, going into youth pastor role and then maybe starting up the church that you're at currently, correct?
Yeah. So I was at that church 5.5 years, man, 5.5 great years. We arrived with about 35, 40 kids in the youth group. And that last year in 96, we were up in the 200s, and it ends up, looking back, we had over 30 of those kids go out in full-time ministry out of that group. It was, it was that right place at the right time and the right moment. But yet in 1996, I knew that season was up through a lot of chain of events. I knew that time was up, and I had some opportunities to go other places. in the country, much larger, much more money. But I couldn't kick that. I felt like I was called to be in the Ackworth, Kennesaw area, and really no explanation. It had just become home. But what didn't exist then was a church for people who didn't go to church. Everything was very, traditional in a bad way. They were just how we all grew up thinking about church. It was just a regular old church, but not a place that a person who didn't go to church would be drawn to want to go with you. Mm-hmm. And so I called my pastor growing up, Ike, who was going through a transition at that moment as well, and said, let's do a church together. And I remember him going, Mike, you have turned down some amazing churches. Why? And I'm like, I don't know. I just think this is the right time. This is the right season. And I'm all in on it. Hmm. I'm willing to take the risk. And so he jumped in and said he was in. I said, if you're in, I'm in. And I resigned my church. And we just knew this is what God was calling us to. And if it doesn't work, we'll figure it out. And that was a decision I never look back on now.
Mm-hmm. And being willing to just figure it out and understand, hey, we're just going to go for it and be all in. I think
that's
it's
right.
Key. I think that's a big key. And then obviously you had one of your mentors and friends, Ike, coming in with you to do it together. And so doing that, because starting a church, starting a business, it's not easy to do that.
No.
And turning down a lot of really good opportunities to go do that is something where I feel like you have to feel, and trust in God in the moment to take those steps and to be equipped to go do that, I think is key.
That's exactly right. And he brought credibility to it. I was 28, but he had been in it a long time, is very well known here in the Atlanta area. And so being able to do that, if I had done this as a 28-year-old, it wouldn't have been, I wasn't ready for it. Mm-hmm. I had a lot more seasoning because I got out of student ministry and I learned adult ministry. And what you learn about adults is they're really just bigger teenage problems, right? Breakups or divorces, and cheating is now on your taxes and not on test. And so it's just more ramifications for it. But I had to learn that, and getting to do that for a couple years with Ike as his sort of his two was massive in the long picture, in the bigger story.
What did you learn from him? That,
man, I learned the power of vision and the ability to say no. I think if I had started at Bailey, I would have said yes to everything just to get momentum. And I would have, if anybody had an idea, I would have said yes to it. And I would have lost the bigger vision that we were called to, because I would have taken us down too many trails. And Ike was older, and Ike's like, no, that's not what we're doing. Well, if you're not doing that, then I'm not coming. Okay, we'll be good. No, Ike, we really need them. We got to get paid, right? But he said no today for a bigger yes tomorrow. And man, that was probably my number one takeaway during that time of don't get shortcutted on the vision you've been given. And when you get those people lined up, don't just run off down every side change it. And Ike was so fixated on the call that we felt like we had been given that he wasn't, because we weren't doing church like everybody else. We didn't have Sunday school. We were meeting in a school, which is normal now, but back then it wasn't. People met in homes. We didn't have offices. I mean, it was crazy, but he wouldn't deviate off the vision. And man, we are who we are today because he didn't just go, well, they want to do this and they're mad and all that stuff. And he just stayed focused, and it got us to where we are today.
That's a great perspective, because as you start, I mean, it sounds like you're a pretty ambitious person. So I'd love to kind of dive into that as well here in the future here. But being able to say no to things and understand what the vision is, and being able to discern like what's right, what's wrong, and let's continue to move forward and not compromise on some things that we should not compromise on anyway.
That's right.
When you're ambitious and you're trying to grow, you're wanting to try to grow as fast as possible. What has that been like for you to be able to balance maybe the tension of being ambitious, but discerning, having an open hand as opposed to a closed hand and just driving and driving and driving and going and going and going. What does that look like for you? Because that's a challenge for a lot of people, including myself.
It is a challenge. It is a challenge. And I know you've got a little one on the way, and the challenge will get even greater because, you know, in life, I don't want to be good. I want to be great. And I was like that playing baseball. I want to be like that in how I attack every day, but my definition of what that is has got to change, because if greatness is only what the world views as success, that is a very different trajectory that it'll put your life on that I think causes a lot of regrets in people's lives. And they think it's going to be something at a rival that it's just not. And so for me, it's getting up and attacking every day, but doing it with the understanding I'm going to give my best today, but at the end of the day, my best is going to be all I got. And my job's not to win the game every day. My job is to move the ball and to go in a good direction every day. And I heard John Maxwell say this. It's one of the greatest quotes I've ever heard. It was on somebody's podcast. I don't remember whose it was. It may have been yours. So no. I rip off people all the time. But anyways, John said, they said, John, you've written 74 books. You've done blah, 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 and all the things John's done. They said, how do you do it? And this is what he said. Compound consistency. Compound consistency. You do the work over and over and over and over every day. And you turn around and you go, wow. But you didn't do anything great every day. You were just consistent in the things that mattered. And for you, you're going to need to be consistent being a husband and a dad. And so I was with a group this morning. We talked about this. There's permanent name tags and there's temporary name tags. Permanent name tag is who I am in Christ, the husband that I am to my wife, and the dad I am to my kids. Those are my permanent name tags. My temporary name tag is the pastor of North Star Church and podcast host and whatever. Those are all temporary. They'll be done. Somebody else will wear all those things one day. I'm not going to fail at being great in the ones that matter. And so I think it's that reminder every day I got to know where I'm going and know what I'm doing, but I'm not going to waste my best out with people that aren't going to cry at my funeral. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have my best say for the people that are the permanent name tag people.
Yeah. I love the name tag idea. I've not heard that before, so I definitely wrote that down.
I stole that too. Okay. Nothing's original, man. Nothing's original.
Yeah, but it's so true. You do have permanent and you have temporary, and it's understanding what those permanent things are and making sure those are the things that you're going to hit every single day. And like you said before, that compounding interest, that compounding consistency. And that's what I think as you learn from different people and different leaders and different coaches and pastors, it's that consistency every single day. It doesn't have to be something crazy. It's just that consistent daily discipline to do the right thing, to be a great husband, to be a great pastor, to create a great business leader. To be a steward of your finances. You know,
that's
how
right.
Do people wind up in financial insecurities? Because they make stupid decisions over time.
That's right. Know?
And so I think that's a great perspective, because it's not necessarily fun to be consistent, because it's very boring, right? But how can you create an environment in your life to make sure you make those main things the main things and do them every single day? And yeah, you can add some variety in there and make it fun for sure. But it's that consistency, like you said, that makes the big difference. So I think that's fantastic. And kind of going into, you know, your role as it changed and you became the lead pastor, what did that look like for you to obviously understand the name tag idea? But there's a lot of things that go with some of those roles that are a little bit more temporary. And how do you be able to spend your time towards the right things and time management and being a little bit of a juggler in terms of being able to manage the things that you need to manage?
Yeah, it was a big change. And I thought I understood it, and I didn't understand it. And I remember Ike going, there's different pressures that come when you're the guy. Oh, yeah, I know. I've been here too. And then the day that all the transition happened and I knew that that church was now my responsibility and that staff that was there was now my responsibility and that debt that was there was now mine. And I'll tell you what, man, I thought about leadership very differently at that point. And it was overwhelming when I thought it was all on me. And this is where the faith piece comes in. But when I remember that really, ultimately, it really is the Lord's and I'm stewarding it too, was when I could breathe a little bit. And knowing it's okay to say, I don't know. And that was hard for me. I didn't want to tell anybody I didn't know because I thought I had to know. Now, sometimes the best thing you tell them is that you don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Let me get back with you on that. And I think you just learn, right? And our church was just so gracious to give me room to learn and to grow. And they knew me and they knew a lot of them knew my heart. They knew me at my old church. And so we just started on and I knew what I knew and I grew as I grew. And so I read a lot, you know, back then I'd get a lot of CDs and cassettes that I would listen to about leadership. And I just would get my hands on anything just so I could expand and be the best that I could be. You know, we have this joke all the time, Bailey. I'm like, one day I'll be gone from North Star and a real pastor is going to show up and you're going to like, holy moly, man, what's Mike been doing all these years? This is what it's supposed to look like. They just don't know. All they know, really, all they know is me for all these years. And so, you know, I just do the best I can with every day. And at the end of that day, I gave my best for the Lord. I sign his name at the end of the day. I believe he'd sign off on that day. And I'm going to get up tomorrow morning and get back at it. Mm. You know, we were talking about my parents earlier. My dad served at his company for 46 years, one company.
Wow.
And my mom served at the same bank for 30 years. And just watching them just get up every day and go do it. And I think that bled down into me and my brother and my sister that we're all very much like that, that, man, I want to plant my roots. I heard Rick Warren say years ago, you know, to do anything great, you got to plant your church, plant your feet for as long as you can. And he challenged every pastor to plant for their career. And I remember hearing that. I was like, okay, I pray if the church would have me, that this could be where I spend the rest of my journey. And that's still my prayer. I'm not to the finish line yet, but I'm definitely the fourth quarters, the clock's on. Yeah, it is.
What was it easy for you to have that perspective of being planted and not thinking about the next thing or where you wanted to go, but just being focused on being the best that you can be right where you're at?
Yeah, big time. And I made a choice, Bailey. While my kids, I had an older gentleman, he'd been a parent of students in my youth group, and he ended up coming on staff with us at North Star at one point. But he sat me down and he goes, Mike, you're going to have the rest of your life to travel. You're going to be in your 40s when your kids are off in college. You're going to be able to do whatever you want to do. But while they're growing up, be home. Mm-hmm. And I made that choice. Now, I did a tiny, tiny bit of traveling. Very, very little though. I was going to be home and I gave up things, you know, what Maxwell says, there's trade-offs for trade-ups. I had to trade off some things to be able to be at home as much as I could and be at my kids' games and all the things that go along with that. But I have no regrets of that. No regrets. So I didn't get it. I had a few great opportunities that came my way, but saying no was not hard. Because I felt like this community was where I was called to. I felt that when I was as a youth pastor, and man, it just didn't distract me that much. And part of it was I wasn't out there. So it wasn't as tempting because I was, you know, I was known around Ackworth and Kennesaw, but I really wasn't known anywhere else.
Yeah. And I think that's a great perspective and great point because it is so challenging, especially today, to be present and do a great job where you're at, as opposed to always thinking about the next thing. But that's whenever right. You do a great job where you're at, just like back in college when you were working in the summertime and you met that guy 3 or 4 years later, he comes back and says, hey, we'd love to have you. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what enables you to have opportunities. But it's a really, really challenging thing to do today in our environment that we live in, because we're always thinking about the next thing. We get to see everybody's story every single day of their life and get to compare it to what they're doing. So
that's right.
Which is not healthy, but it is what it is.
That's exactly right.
And kind of going back into your story a little bit, what made you have a podcast called Lynch with a Leader.
Yep.
What was the kind of the genesis of that, and why did you start it, and what has it been like for you to be able to have the podcast?
Yeah. So, back in 2014, I went through a really transformative 3 days with Blackaby Leadership. They do a coaching certificate, and I'd been approached by a Chick-fil-A executive in Atlanta about doing some coaching for him, some personal life coaching. And my response was, I can help you with a slider or a changeup, but I don't know how I'm going to help you. You're way past me. And he's like, no, I want you to do it. Well, I think you and I are a lot alike, Bailey. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go get some training on it. I saw Blackaby, who I knew from Experience in God, had a weekend workshop. And man, I was introduced to something that changed my life. And the phrase was spiritual leadership. I had never heard that phrase before. I love leadership, all aspects of leadership. I had never heard spiritual leadership, that phrase. And so I went through a year-long coaching with them. And I remember in that there was in one of the books I read, there was a phrase that says, the next generation pastor won't pastor a church. They'll pastor a community. I was like, that's something to that. Both of my kids, my son graduated high school 2012. My daughter graduated in 2015. So this is right around when both of them are getting off in college and the whole bit. And I think, looking back now, I believe God had been preparing me for this new season of my wife and I being here together. And so during that in 2017, we had our 20th anniversary as a church. And we set a goal in our 20th anniversary of helping 10,000 people take their next step towards Christ, which was an audacious goal. But I remember coming home to my wife and I said, I think I'm supposed to do this. I think that's my calling too. Not just the churches. I think I'm supposed to do it. I have no idea how to do it. So I began to write down, this was in January of 2017, and began to write down a lot of ideas. February of 2017, I'm on a ball field one afternoon, getting ready. And I get a phone call that my dad had fallen. I didn't think much about it. Drove to Fayetteville and found out he had had an aneurysm, fallen down the steps and broken his neck and wasn't going to survive. That was in February of 2017. Dad passed. We ended up having to make that decision to take him off life support the next day, and he passed. And so we go through all the emotions of that. Totally unexpected. In April, my mom says she doesn't feel well. We took her to the doctor. She's eating up with cancer. She's gone in a month. Mm. And so all of a sudden I'm sitting there I remember my sister saying, we're orphans. And it was the weirdest thought. I'm in my 40s, but yet they're your parents, you know? So we literally left my mom's funeral, drove to Orange Beach. We're already going on vacation. And I was sitting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, couldn't sleep, just looking out the window. And I pulled out that file I had been writing about podcast and other ideas. And I thought, hey, I'll just give it a shot. So I sent emails to 5 people and said, if I started a podcast, would you join me? It's going to be about spiritual leadership. How do people lead with their faith out in front? Hoping, Bailey, they would all go, yeah, no, I think I'll pass. And every one of them said yes. And they were names that were reaches for me. And that started the journey. And, I look back now, I guess we're 178 episodes in, I can't remember not doing it. And out of that ballooned spiritual leadership groups and a event I put on once a month at my church called Lunch with a Leader that began in 2018. Well, we'll have 130 to 170 business leaders come in to learn spiritual leadership during a work day. It's the craziest thing, but that's how it all started. That's how it all germinated.
Well, I think too, the mission at the start to reach 10,000 people. It's far exceeded that. I mean, I don't know the numbers, but I know it's far exceeded that. But when you have the right mission and you're trusting God and you're just going and figuring it out, the rest will fall into place. It doesn't mean it's going to be successful, but when you're trusting God like you did, it exponentially grows and compounds.
That's right.
Right?
That's exactly right.
And so you have 178, is that what you said, episodes?
Yep, somewhere in there.
Yeah, that consistency compounds, right? And so what have you taken away and learned the most from having the podcast? You've had so many great leaders on, but what are some key traits real quick that you would take away from your podcast?
I think this sounds terrible.
Okay.
One of the things I've learned is that the great ones just aren't great people. Like they're normal people who chose to let the Lord use their gifts in a great way. And they can't tell you how. They just did it. And they were so intentional about doing, and you hit on this earlier, they do the things everybody else thinks about doing. They just do it. I remember years ago having a guy named William Vanderblumen on. Vanderblumen owns the largest church search firm. Well, I had talked to friends 1,000 times about, dude, I ought to be getting a finder's fee for all the people I'm helping get jobs. Well, he didn't just talk about it. He went and started it. And that story, John Gordon's fable books. Well, a lot of people have thought of those ideas. John just went and did it. Mm-hmm. And he planted the flag and he became Mr. Positive. And now we look back and we can't remember the world without John Gordon. But that story, how many times has that story been told? Over and over and over. The people, they just keep doing the next right thing. And I think that's the thing I get out of the podcast. And I'm like you, I learn. If nobody listened, I learn so much. And I learn from the research and the reading and the study. And then I get off the call and go, God, they were just regular old people who they let the Lord use their gifts in amazing ways. And they're so willing to help. This is the other thing. They're so willing to help other people. Like they want to help other people. They want listeners to hear more than just selling their book. They want them to know you can do this.
Yeah.
And it's been an amazing journey listening to these folks.
Absolutely. Well, I think what you said makes so much sense. It's trusting God and then taking the action when he calls you.
That's right.
Throughout the Bible and the stories of that, it's by faith. Abraham went by faith. He didn't know what that looked like.
That's exactly right.
David, Joseph, we go on and on and on. And that really is the story. But unfortunately, that is sometimes really challenging for us because we let fear or doubt creep in, or we have our own selfish desires that impose, you know, maybe the will of God in our life. So I think that hits the nail on the head on what makes people different.
Yeah.
So,
and I think some of them, the Lord, they have a high capacity to lead, and that capacity grows over time, but they have a different threshold than a lot of people too, with the giftings they've been given.
Sure. But it's understanding those giftings and then utilizing them. So, well, real quickly, I want to honor your time as we wind down, but you know, a few quick questions for you. One being, you've touched on being putting the name tag on and putting your family first. What does it mean to be a good husband and father, in your opinion?
Consistency. And I think consistency and intentionality. So we say this all the time in our home. I wanted my kids to grow up and go, he's the same Monday to Saturday as he is on Sundays. Mm-hmm. And we were, like, I was crazy about that. I didn't want my kids to be part of the story of preacher's kids who go, yeah, you didn't know my dad. I know you heard him and he sounded funny and you enjoyed him, but you don't know him. And I was crazy about, I want my faith. So I had a guy named Dave Barnes, and I asked him how his dad was a pastor. And Dave said, I said, what did he do right? And Dave said he had a functional faith. It was the same as if he would have been an accountant or a school teacher. He said, that's why I wanted faith in my life, because of my dad. And so, you know, I'm on the back end of it now. Bailey, my son's 29. My daughter's 26. I don't get that influence every day, but man, intentionality and consistency. That was the key. We had dinner for my son's wife last night. He grilled out and cooked, and we were all sitting around a table, and we got in the car and left. And I asked my wife, I said, did you ever dream we'd be sitting there with our grown kids and laughing and telling stories and enjoying them more now than I've ever enjoyed them?
That's fantastic. Well, real quickly, we've got a little fire round for you. So I'll say a sentence. You can finish with a word or sentence, however you feel led. So you can do anything if.
You can do anything if you choose to take the first step.
Humility means?
Thinking more of God than you do yourself.
Favorite vacation spot?
Hilton Head.
Persistence is?
Choosing not to quit in advance.
You have a favorite book?
Leadership Pain by Sam Chand.
Awesome. Well, we're done with the fire round. The final two questions I have for you, is there a certain piece of best advice that maybe you haven't already shared, and what would that be?
I think the best advice I could give anybody is God's got a bigger plan for your life than you do. Trust Him. He's got a purpose that far outweighs your abilities. Trust Him with your life.
Absolutely. That's great advice. Well, the final question, this podcast is called Building Excellence. What does building excellence mean to you?
Consistently doing the right things over a long period of time. And I think that's how you build excellence.
That's great. Well, Mike, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your story and all of the things that you've learned from your story, as well as what you do today to impact so many people for Christ and to make people better leaders. So if people wanted to follow your show and learn more about you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, they can go to the podcast site, Lynch, L-I-N-C-H, Lynch with a Leader. And that's on any of the podcast platforms. You can go to Mike Lynch, LINCH.com or NorthStarChurch.org. And then I'm on all the social medias under at Mike Lynch, L-I-N-C-H.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Bailey.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Building Excellence Podcast. If you found value today, we would really appreciate it if you shared the show and left a rating and review. Also, be sure to follow us on all podcasts and social platforms, as well as YouTube, where you can watch full video episodes. To learn more about the podcast or any coaching or speaking, check out baileymiles.com. Thanks again, and now go work to build excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy.